Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Monday, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Absolute pleasure to be with each and every one of you. And we now bring in Sir Kevin of Her.
Steven, how was the weekend?
Good.
Had a great game Saturday night.
But people want to talk yet about Saturday night.
I'd rather talk about Saturday night. You had a great game on Saturday night.
They want to talk about your disaster yesterday.
It was not a disaster.
Did you win?
It was not successful, but it was not a disaster.
It was a disaster. You're out. All right, so.
Not disagreeing with the out part. That is absolutely correct.
All right. Here, in all seriousness, now, all kidding aside. Geez, Johnny Bach passed away. Wow. Okay. Jeez, I just talked to Doug Collins the other night. I just talked to Doug Collins on. We talked about Johnny Bach the other night. Wow. How about that? Johnny Bach was the head coach of Penn State basketball in the 60s and 70s, and then went on, and he was an assistant coach, I think, on the Olympic teams, including the one that was in the famous game with the Soviets that was so. You want to talk about screwed up officiating.
Questionable Nets officiating. How's that?
No. It was. No, that is one where I can say that's the one time I can look at something and I can say they were cheated. And they were cheated. Doug Collins, and Dick and I just talked to Doug Saturday night. Sorry about the sidebar here. I just found out about Johnny. Johnny was an assistant coach with Doug with the Bulls. And you want to talk about a guy who knows X's and O's. Wow. Really, really good. Really, really good. He'll be missed. Very much so. He'll be missed. And Johnny was as classy a guy. So, yeah. Really classy. Okay, now, so I just found out. My apologies. I didn't mean to pull an ADD moment there and just jump off the rails.
Usually that's my job.
Let's see. We'll have Brandon Gowton today, Nathan Davis, but also Ryan Snyder today on recruiting, football recruiting. That'll be in the final half hour of the show. So we got a lot going on today. Let's see. Topics from Kevin. Penn State fills coaching spot. We'll talk about that because I think that was just a rock solid hire by James Tim Banks. Big road win Saturday night. Penn State defensively. We'll get into that. Eagles new head coach. We got Gowton. Okay, coming up. And I already talked about why Doug Peterson was a good hire. Steelers did almost everything they needed to win.
That was my own personal belief. You know, we talked about this on Friday.
Here's the issue, very simply. When you're in a situation like the Steelers were in, where you lose maybe the best wide receiver in the game, you've already been without the best running back in the game, but the guy that stepped in for him did one heck of a job. So now you've lost those two guys. Your quarterback is wounded, hanging in there. What all of this does is it just dramatically reduces your margin for error. You can get away with a mistake here and there. Ben can get away with an interception here, an interception there, because you got enough in the tank to overcome it. And, all right, it's a setback, but you can overcome it as the game goes on. That's what I'm talking about with margin of error. When you get into a situation like the Steelers were in yesterday, the margin of error, because you don't have Antonio Brown, because you don't have either Bell, who'd been out for a while anyway, or D'Angelo Williams, now that margin of error goes down where you can't really turn the ball over a lot, you can't have a lot of penalties, and you got to be good on special teams. How many times have I talked about this in a Penn State realm where I've talked the last 2 years in particular, and I've talked about this in basketball for years, where, look, the margin of error, the number of things that you that can go wrong for you becomes a very slim list, as opposed to the other guy who's got a little bit more in the tank, is healthy, is all set, and, you know, and they can throw an interception. They can give up a few penalties, whatever, because they got enough going for them where in enough ways to turn where, okay, Hillman's having a bad day, I can put in Anderson. All right, well, if Toussaint's having a bad day, I can put in Todman. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
I hope you think that works for you.
I think every Steeler fan felt that way. They felt, you know, okay, these two guys did pretty well considering, but yeah, that's not your first choice.
But again, so the Steelers go through, and guess what? They have a lousy day kicking the ball. I'm talking about punting.
A lousy day
punting the ball. And they gave up field position because of it. You also were not helped at all by the fact that Whedon can't field punts.
Ugh.
Because you don't have Brown back there. There's no judgment on punts at all. None. No judgment.
And I will give him a little bit of leeway because it was a very windy day, and that made it tougher for a guy who isn't used to returning punts on a regular basis to return punts.
No offense, that's why God created the fair catch. So
yeah, but he didn't even catch that one.
I know. I'm just saying, it's a windy day, judgment's lousy, and I'm not so sure after watching him kick that field goal at the end, like the, you know, sort of garbage time field goal he kicked. Okay, we can set up an onside kick, which is successful once every millennium. That they shouldn't have kicked to start the fourth quarter instead of punting.
Yeah, you mean the they were around the 50-yard field goal? The difference, I think, there, Steve, is they were kind of, if I remember correctly, and I may be wrong, but they were kind of into the angle of a wind. And I think the feeling was kicking with the wind at an angle wouldn't be as bad as trying to kick a 50-yarder into the wind with an angle.
Kevin, there is no angle in the NFL. What are you talking about? There's
no
kicking in the NFL.
The wind wasn't directly behind him or directly in front of him. That's what I mean. The wind was coming in at an angle.
You mean it's a crosswind?
Yeah, but I don't even know if it was. It technically wasn't even a crosswind. It was kind of like the last kick was kind of at his back and angled a little bit to the left.
No, it wasn't. The last one was the same direction. He kicked it 47 yards and hit the net.
Okay. Listen, I'm not disagreeing with you. I would have rather seen them try a field goal there too. Here's the drawback with that, and I've got a contradiction to that too. But you miss it, you give them the ball.
You're good at this.
You give them the ball at the 35 yard.
I love when Kevin like gives his opinion and his answer,
and then contradicts himself.
And in the middle of the answer, talks himself out of it. Go ahead.
But here's the thing, because I know what you're going to say. You kick a field goal there, you miss it, you give them the ball at the 35 yard line. But if you look at the average starting position for the Broncos offense, that's actually one of the worst starting positions they would have had for the day. So I see both sides of this. One,
Boswell was really, really good. All right, all
best
season,
mid-season free agent pickup ever.
And I would have let him kick the field goal there. Now, you know, and I figured out pretty quickly, you know, this is where these guys were kind of confusing on the air. I figured out pretty quickly on the air watching the game why Gary Kubiak took the 15-yard penalty and near the end of the third quarter. He did because he knew it was near the end of the quarter and he wanted the 15 yards and not the down because they're going to be switching ends.
Yeah, they ended up switching before that field goal, or before the end of that series, yeah. Didn't they?
Yes. Yeah, one play later.
Yeah.
He did it, because he switched ends, because now he wanted the Steelers to play into the wind 15 yards further back. That's why he took the penalty and not the down. He thought the extra 8 yards, because they were changing ends, was more valuable.
Listen, I don't think the offense was outstanding, but the offense did exactly what they needed to do against the number one defense.
He did a good job. Roethlisberger played well. I thought, for the most part, outside of a couple of drops, I thought the receivers played well. I thought the running game was lousy,
yes.
Which you would expect it to be. I thought James Harrison played a great game. I thought Allen played a great game. I thought Shazier played a great game. I thought Stephon Tuitt played a great game. There's just several guys. I mean, all the way across the board. But you can't keep giving Peyton Manning short fields.
Well, here's what I saw in the fourth quarter. The Steelers defense had played.
You're not going to talk yourself out of this one,
no,
too, are you?
No, I'm not. The Steelers defense played very well through the game. All right, the secondary played much better than I think that I expect them to play. I knew the front seven or eight would be fine.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I think the Steelers secondary looked a lot better because of all the drops by Denver.
And that helped.
Denver dropped a lot of passes yesterday.
And that helped. But I think there's one factor that
and they created no takeaways yesterday.
No, none. But that defense was out on the field a lot in the fourth quarter, and I think in that last drive, which was almost 7 minutes, it took its toll.
Yeah, it did.
And the thin air took its toll.
But again, to a point. You know me, I try not to think about such things.
I understand, but I think at that point of the game, it made a difference.
Because Karen and Dick Girardi went out to Breckenridge right at Christmas time, right after Las Vegas. And she was going on and on about, I'm just so worried about going up into the... I said, oh, I said, come on, it doesn't make any effect. I said, don't even think about it. Just have a good time. I said, you think about it, you're going to, you know. And see, that's again when we come back to you. You'd be telling your team the entire time, I'm worried about the thin air. See, you'd have them all psyched out.
At the end of this game, I'm not denying that. At the end of this game.
I know you're not denying, because you know you would.
Would.
Everybody, get on oxygen.
Make sure you have the oxygen tanks nearby. And I think if the Steelers defense would have had time for an oxygen tank, it would have helped. But anyway, I was not upset with this loss. I really wasn't.
The big thing was the Steelers created defensively, I thought, did a good job most of the day. I think they were dramatically helped by the number of drops Denver had yesterday. Denver must have had 7 or 8 drops.
They had 5 in the first half, Steve.
All right. So a lot of drops. So the Steelers defense helped by that. Number two, the Steelers didn't create any takeaways. None. They created 0, which could have changed the tone, the tempo, the field position, and so forth. They didn't create any. Will Allen, his blitz, disguised it beautifully, well-timed off the edge. Every time he did it, Denver, you watch New England. New England's going to look at the Steeler tape and say, maybe we can do this. James Harrison, I thought, played a fabulous game. All the way through. I thought Harrison played as well as he played like he was 10 years younger. I thought Stephon Tuitt played a fabulous game. I thought Shazier played a fabulous game. I just saw a lot of really good big-time Steeler effort yesterday on that. I thought the receivers, for the most part, once they got their legs under them, played a good game. And I thought the kid from Auburn, Coach, stepped in, and I thought he played well. In the game, Jesse James played well. Heath Miller did not have a good game.
He did not. He did not have a good game, and I think it's because I think they really covered him well because of knowing that that's going to be Heath. That's Heath Miller is going to be the favorite target of Ben now that Brown isn't there.
Why did he drop it?
Well, that wasn't terrible defense either. I mean, he did have a hand in there.
Kevin, he is a professional receiver. Don't defend your guy because you're in love with him, okay? He didn't have a good game.
I do like him a lot.
Okay? Yeah, he dropped the ball. It was a key play that was just a flat-out drop that he is supposed to catch as a professional tight end. And then on the flanker screen, he completely whiffed at a block, and another one, he didn't even get out there.
Yeah, that was actually bad for him.
I mean, both of those were ones where he's the key guy in the play, and once he missed, and the other one, he didn't get out there quick enough. Like, wow. Like, okay, which is something that you're just not used to seeing from him because he plays the game at such an incredibly high level, very high level. And yesterday, for whatever reason, Heath Miller didn't have it.
But you look at
me, and he's had it for what, 10 years? What, how many years? 10 years. I mean, he's flat out had it for 10 years. There, he is one of the three best tight ends this league has seen over the last 10 years, without a doubt. And I thought he had a great season for the Steelers this year. No tight end blocks better than he does. He's an exceptional receiver. He's dependable. Yesterday, he dropped a key one that they needed over the middle. That is his play. And a couple plays where they needed him to get out and throw the key block because it really revolves around his block. He whiffed on one, and he didn't get out there quick enough on the other one. Not quick enough, I'm talking about like 5 yards short.
Yeah, even I saw that one, and I was surprised.
Like, holy cow, I thought, what happened here?
But you know what, this team, when you consider the injuries, they
don't get there without Heath Miller, so please they don't get there without him. Just yesterday was not his day, without question. And I just, you know, look, they're underdogs going in. They didn't have to play perfect to win, but their margin of error was really thin. And they didn't help their margin of error by not getting a takeaway. They didn't help their margin of error by then having the one turnover of the game. And they didn't help their margin of error by generating just enough of a running game to make a difference.
But you look at the injuries this team had throughout the season, and this is why I was not upset about this loss. I like
Pouncey out. I mean, everybody.
Huge.
Yeah, big stuff.
You know, you lost Ben for how many weeks, and then you brought in Vic, and then you lost. You know, Vic wasn't effective. Then you brought in Jones, your third string quarterback, got you a couple of wins along the way. I mean, to get to the divisional playoffs with the adversity, I'm happy with this season. Yeah. I really am.
Now, here's the other part. All right. What kind of lack of maturity and the lack of adults do you have in Cincinnati? What the? I mean, all tweeting out left and right their basic joy that the Steelers left. What are you doing here? Okay, you're professionals. Right? Act like a professional. Everybody who tweeted out from the Bengals how happy they were the Steelers lost, to me, they aren't professionals. If I'm Marvin Lewis, I'm worried about the lack of maturity on my team. It's time to grow up. It's time to be the adults at the table. It's time to take care of business yourself, and it's time to finally win a playoff game yourself before you start swaggering about somebody else beating him in the playoffs. I found that to be disgusting and ignorant. Now, it's not our bozo of the day. They will not be our bozo of the day.
Found something better than that?
Yeah, I did. It was actually in a basketball game last night, Utah and Oregon State.
Oh, I think I know what this is, too.
Yeah, so, you know. But if I'm Mike Brown, I'm bringing Marvin Lewis in today. I say, you know what? What kind of makeup do we have on our football team here? Well, what do we have here? I mean, I'm looking at Twitter, and I've got all this joy and happiness and the whole thing, you know, because somebody else beat the Steelers. Okay, fine. Let's grow up here. How about we beat them? How about we do that? How about we advance in the playoffs? See how it feels to get to the next weekend. Now, you got to start taking care of your own business. By the way, kudos to the little things mean something. And little things lead to big things. Peyton Manning and Larry Fitzgerald are two athletes that have had great NFL careers. Doing something post-game lets you know about how you keep your head about yourself. Peyton Manning handed Demaryius Thomas the ball the second the game was over so he could give it to his mother because she had never seen him play in person before. The second the game was over, he handed her the game ball. And notice every time Peyton Manning does an interview after the game, well, Michelle, well, you know, well, Tracy, well, okay, thanks, Tracy, always mentions and knows who he's talking to. Larry Fitzgerald, huge win, big plays and overtime and all night long, and he scores the game winner. He's doing his post-game interview. Shout out to Chris Mortensen. Right after the game. After he's won one of the biggest games of his career. What does that tell you about an athlete that knows everything around them and their surroundings? That tells me volumes. Is it a small thing to look at Tracy Wolfson and know you're talking to Tracy Wolfson or to Michelle Tafoya? You don't see a lot of other guys saying things. They act like they don't even know who they're talking to when they're talking to them. He knows exactly who he's talking to. And he also knew at the end of the game, after everyone's doubted him for months, he wins a playoff game to go to the AFC Championship. He kneels down and he hands the ball to the guy whose mother watched him for the first time in person ever. Like right away. And Larry Fitzgerald scores the game winner, and he's out there telling everybody, hey, Chris Mortensen, hey, we're thinking of you. And it wasn't even ESPN doing the game. Little things. If you do enough of the little things, they lead to big things. Those are two great athletes that have always taken care of the little things, and they've always been able to take care of big things because they're usually the coolest cats in the room. Brandon Gowden, next half hour. Nathan Davis at 4:06. Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated, on recruiting in the final half hour of the show. Big one today brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PurdyInsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
This year's New Year's resolution at Sunbury Motors Kia is easy.
Wanna see you in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
Easy as in 0% APR financing for up to 66 months on all remaining 2015 models, as well as the 2016 Sereno, Sportage, Sedona, Forte, and the iconic Soul. And remember, all new Kias come with an easy 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. So with a huge selection of quality Kias, all clearly sale priced, backed by one of the best warranties in the business, well, it just doesn't get any easier than this to ring in the new year with a new Kia. So resolve to come down to the strip in Hummel's Wharf or at SunburyMotors.com. 2016 is going to be easy at Sunbury Motors Kia. SMC, selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to Kia.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Yeah, planet's pretty big, you know. Planet's huge.
I heard it takes you 80 days to get around it.
Oh, boy. Do you believe everything Jules Verne told you?
Hey, he had submarines before submarines were ever thought of.
Exactly. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Force Rated Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, keywords 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. What gutsy move did they make this week with a car with you?
This week we're featuring the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid, which gives you an average of 41 miles to the gallon, smoothly switches between the hybrid engine and gas engine, and it has every possible feature you could ever want in a vehicle, including adaptive cruise, so you set it, set the distance you want for the car in front of you, and just go ahead and steer. And by the way, if you drift across the yellow line or the white line, it'll let you know that too by alerting you and then helping you to guide back into the lane safely. And if you do need to change lanes, you have the lane assist that will actually alert you in the rear view mirror and audibly that there is a vehicle in your blind spot and you probably shouldn't pull out in front of it. Just some of the great safety features as well as the gas mileage features of the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid. Imagine what you'd be paying at the pump when the gas prices were high. Well, guess what? You're saving that money plus more now that the gas prices are even lower.
Yeah, I was in West Lafayette, Indiana. It's $1.49.
Yeah, I mean...
$1.49, amazing.
About a year ago, you were paying $3 a gallon, so you're saving $1.49 a gallon. Plus, yeah, you're not going to the pump as much now.
Right, no doubt. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com for complete insurance coverage with a group that cares about every stage of the insurance process and does so with complete caring. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. There's nobody else to go to. This day in sports history, and then Brandon Gauton. On this day in sports history, 1951, a rule that changed Kevin's football life forever. The NFL passed a rule that the tackle, guard, and center are not eligible to catch a forward pass. Kevin, you're out. Gone.
Yeah, I only had one fumble recovery as well. Never got caught a pass.
And they had so many plays drawn up with you in mind.
I know. I'm tackle eligible.
Yes. 1969, Ted Williams was appointed manager of the Washington Senators. And not only that, Ted Williams is actually a very good manager. He didn't have a lot to work with. He actually got the Senators over 500 one year. Not bad. 1976, the Bicentennial Game, Super Bowl between the Steelers and Cowboys. Pittsburgh won it 21-17. I talked to one of the participants in that game just about 2.5 hours ago.
Gee, I wonder who that might have been, huh?
I wonder who. He had a couple. You're really happy about the Tim Banks selection as the safeties coach. He liked that a lot. So did I. And I also wanted to pass on to him that Doug Collins wanted me to say hi to him. I don't think a lot of people realize Jack and Joanne are Doug Collins' daughter. Jack and Joanne are the godparents. See, a lot of people don't realize that. So, you didn't know that either, did you?
No.
And you've kind of like aggressively stalked them over the years.
Just the Celtics.
I still haven't given you that one yet.
Had it at one point.
Yeah, not anymore.
No,
that's because of the restraining order. All right, and the Celtics retired. So, one time Jack said, "I'm going to give you a number to call." Whatever, da da da. It's like, it's my home number. And I said, "Yeah, I know it is." He says, "What?" I said, "I already have it. You gave it to me years ago." And he said to me, "And you never called it?" I said, "No." I said, "I'd only call if it was an emergency." He goes, "That's why I gave it to you." He says, "I knew you'd be the one guy that would go, hey." Okay. I said, "Yeah, I know one guy would be calling every 2 minutes. Hello, Mr. Ham.
Want to hang out? Watch the game?
I'm within 5 hours of your home.
I can be there quick."
All right, let's bring in Brandon Gauton, BleedingGreenNation.com, who's sitting right now saying, "Really, how much longer as a hostage do I have to listen to this?" first of all, great to have you with us. What did you think of Doug Peterson being hired, coming back to Philadelphia?
Well, it's funny. I mean, it's certainly something we wouldn't expect a year ago at this time, saying, hey, Chip Kelly's going to be fired and they're going to hire Doug Peterson of all people. So certainly not expected in that kind of time frame. But as we got into this coaching search and as the Eagles' options kind of started to fall off the board with, you know, Ben McAdoo staying in New York and Tom Coughlin deciding not to come back to coaching and things like that, I mean, it started to look like Peterson was the guy. And that's the guy who Adam Schefter had said near the beginning of the process that the Eagles had him marked down as a top candidate. So from that perspective, I mean, you know, we kind of saw this coming from afar.
In fact, and I think if everybody noticed, as soon as Tom Coughlin and Jeffrey Lurie broke talks apart, whatever talks there were or whatever conversation there was, it didn't take them long within a couple of hours to name Doug Peterson.
Right, yeah, it all happened pretty quick. I think, you know, Peterson fit what they were looking for in terms of being, I think, you know, quote unquote, a safe choice, a guy who comes from the Andy Reid era and that system. And obviously, the Eagles had a lot of success with the Andy Reid era. So I think they feel comfortable going back to that kind of thing and finding a coach who really works with Howie Roseman, the team's essential general manager, not officially title of the general manager, but he's going to be in charge of player personnel. And they want a guy like that because they don't want a situation like last year where you have a head coach like Chip Kelly pushing for that personnel power.
All right, now let's go to the next part. When you watch the Kansas City Chiefs and you see how Doug Peterson works with Alex Smith, running backs, wideouts, is Doug Peterson's style, just pure style, a better fit for the Eagles personnel than what Chip was trying to do with it?
You know, it's a good question, and it's really even hard to know exactly how much Doug Peterson does because, you know, Andy Reid was calling the majority of the plays.
That's right.
Andy did say that Doug Peterson started to call some this year, but obviously not in a full-time role, just selective roles and certain packages. I think Doug Peterson did a lot of their two-minute drills throughout the season, certain situational parts of the offense like that. So it's really hard to say. You know, and it really depends on who he wants and everything, too, personnel-wise. You know, quarterback is obviously going to be a big issue and a big question that needs to be resolved. But overall, you know, I think the Eagles have enough talent and offense to make things work. I think with Peterson, I think part of the attraction, at least in theory and or hope, would be that he's a little bit more flexible than Chip Kelly, not so much about maybe having his scheme as much as it is playing to the strength of the players.
When Doug Peterson was in Philadelphia, Brandon, was he the kind of guy that a lot of people, like the players, could talk to, felt comfortable with, front office felt comfortable with, had that kind of open personality?
Yeah, that's exactly one of the big reasons, too. I think they hired him. You hear from not only the players, but, you know, coaches and Andy Reid and just everyone around says, you know, Doug was a really approachable guy. That was a huge issue for the Eagles coming off of Chip Kelly. And, you know, Jeffrey Lurie even said that, you know, they're looking for a coach with, quote unquote, emotional intelligence. And I think Peterson definitely has that emotional intelligence the Eagles were looking for. I think everything we've seen, there haven't been any problems about players, you know, thinking he's not approachable or anything. And we'll see how that changes as he becomes a head coach and might have to be a little bit more disciplinarian role than he was as an offensive coordinator or a quarterback's coach. But I think he has the personality they were looking for.
Did he mention anything today about staff? Because obviously getting a coordinator to work with him, and then on the other side, a defensive coordinator. Any thoughts in that direction?
Yeah, for the offensive coordinator, sounds like it's going to be Frank Reich from the Chargers. He was San Diego.
I live with that.
Yeah, offensive coordinator for the past 2 years. The San Diego, kind of a rough situation there this past year. They had a ton of injuries on offense, not a lot of talent at certain spots, offensive line issues. So he was kind of working with a tough situation there. And the Chargers have been really good passing, obviously. They have Phillip Rivers. That's been a big part of it. So, and he has some play-calling experience. Peterson doesn't. So I think that's a logical fit there. Defensive coordinator is a lot more interesting because they apparently wanted Steve Spagnuolo, who's staying with the Giants, and I don't know why they really wanted him, because you look at his defenses, and they've been really bad. So He's not going to be on the board. Apparently, they don't want Mike Pettine, who got fired from Cleveland. He's reportedly out of the mix. So they're possibly looking at a guy like Jim Schwartz, you know, who used to coach the Lions, for their defensive coordinator.
Interesting. In covering this team, does it have a more conventional feel covering it as opposed to trying to cover a team that's run by Chip Kelly?
It's definitely going to head that way. It's still been busy and everything at this point because of all the decision making and everything going on. But I Chip Kelly is pretty much a rock star when it comes to the head coaching level and just in terms of attention and everything and all of that. So, you know, Peterson is very much not that because he's a guy who, you know, a lot of people probably don't recognize that same kind of name power and name level, which might be good for the team. You know, maybe it's more about the team and not so much more about the person, such as Chip Kelly. It's definitely going to be different.
It is going to be different, no doubt. And I think different in a good way. I think Doug Peterson, I think, brings a little more conventional feel to what's going on and not all the, you know, the different training methods and everything like that. I don't know. There's, something didn't feel right, but that's my opinion. Brandon, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Hey, take care. Thank you.
All right, Brandon Gobin, BleedingGreenNation.com, Nathan Davis next half hour, and then Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated on recruiting final half hour. Johnny Bock passed away today. In fact, Johnny's granddaughter lives about a quarter mile from where I do. Still lives here, as a matter of fact. Johnny coached at Fordham. He coached here at Penn State. In the NBA, he was an assistant on the Warriors team that won the championship in 76, and then he became the head coach of the Warriors at one point. And did so for like 3.5 years. And then he went to the Bulls as an assistant after he was let go by the Warriors. And he and Tex Winter were the two critical guys in what the Bulls did. Tex Winter with the triangle offense, and it was Johnny Bock who was in charge of the Bulls defense. And Johnny, good man, classy guy, never forgot his Penn State roots. I remember, and I mentioned Dick Girardi and I talked with Doug Collins on Saturday night. And, of course, Johnny Bock was an assistant coach with Doug. I know Doug always had nothing but the highest respect for Johnny as a coach, highest respect. And I think the last time Johnny was actually in State College, he may have visited his granddaughter. So, but outside of that, in terms of like professionally, he was an assistant coach with Doug with the Wizards when they came in for an exhibition game in the early 2000s. Michael Jordan, that was when Jordan was on the team. It was Michael Jordan's one Jordan Center appearance. Like, yeah, they named the building after you. Just kidding. We'll come back and have more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, just so people know that as an undergraduate, Johnny Bock was the head basketball coach the first couple of years, my freshman and sophomore year. No, I did not announce any games that Johnny Bock was the coach, okay? But I did start in the Dick Carter era. So I know I go back a long way, but Johnny Bock is one of the few coaches that would precede my tenure announcing Penn State basketball. All right. But I know when I met him, I great respect for him as a coach and what he did. 91 years old, by the way. 91. Steelers lost yesterday. Disgraced the NFL in doing so.
I highly doubt it.
I'm just kidding. I just said that just to see what you would do.
I highly doubt it.
I mean, did you watch the game? Did you see how they acted all day?
Yes, and I was proud to wear a white jersey yesterday with a Steeler logo.
I thought they played really well. I do. I thought they, but again, the margin of error was so thin. The second Tucson fumbled the ball, and look, it's amazing you come back to one play because there's 1,000 plays. But the second he fumbled the ball, I thought, uh-oh, there's the opening Denver's been waiting for.
I agree.
And like, because, again, when the margin of error is thin, you suddenly have that feel of gloom and doom. The second that, uh-oh, we're outside of the margin of error.
Well, and that was a 12-point swing because the Steelers were driving for, at minimum, a field goal there. So, and, you know, they
That's a 12? That's a 12-point
swing?
Well,
I'm assuming they get the touchdown there. I'm not counting the extra points because they're not gimmies anymore. So if you want to make it a 14-point swing, you can, but I'm assuming the Steelers go in for a touchdown.
Oh. Considering they only went in for one all day?
Well, they were really moving the ball in this particular situation.
They went in for one all day.
And you wonder why I sit and second-guess myself in the middle of a comment now. Gee, I wonder why that happens. I have no idea why I do that.
So I'm sitting here thinking, 12-point swing? What the heck is he talking about?
I'm not. The extra points aren't gimmies anymore.
Well, how many Boswell missed this year?
I don't think he missed one.
So you're... So, okay. All right.
I'm just... All right. It's a swing, all right? Just let it at that. Just let it happen.
Nathan Davis next, then Ryan Snyder.